Hello, this is Melinda Minton, Executive. Hello, this is Melinda Minton, Executive Director of the Spa Association. Since 2001, the Spa Association has been a vibrant industry advocate, resource, and trendsetter in the health, beauty, and wellness categories. The Spa Association is your one-stop professional association for information, resources, education, and community in the spa industry. No other organization unites medical spas, day spas, stay spas, fitness, and wellness centers. It's my pleasure today to introduce Michael H. Cohen. He's the founder of the Michael H. Cohen Law Group. He has a BA from Columbia University, a JD from Bolt Hall School of Law at the University of California, Berkeley, an MBA from the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley, and an MFA from the Iowa Writers Workshop. Cohen served as an assistant professor of health law and policy at the Harvard School of Public Health and as an assistant professor of medicine at the Harvard Medical School starting in 2000. He was the first attorney in history to become a full-time faculty member at the Harvard Medical School. Through 2002 to 2004, Cohen was a recipient of a National Institutes of Health Award for scholarly works in biomedicine and health publications. Cohen served as Director of Legal Programs at Harvard Medical School Division for Research and Education in Complementary and Integrative Medical Therapies and was awarded a 40th anniversary Senior Fellowship at the Center for Study of World Religions within Harvard Divinity School. Cohen has served as a committee consultant for the National Academy of Sciences Committee on the Use of Complementary and Alternative Medicine by the American Public and was the president of the Institute for Integrative and Energy Medicine in Newport Beach, California. In addition to his teaching career in the field of healthcare law and policy, Cohen is a graduate of the New Seminary in New York City and an ordained interfaith minister. While at the New Seminary, Cohen studied under Rabbi Joseph Gelberman. He is also a yoga practitioner and author of articles for yoga instructors as well as medical and legal professions. Well, I would say that you're qualified to speak with us today, Mr. Cohen.
Thanks for the introductions. It's great to be here with you.
So I've been in the spa industry for about 32 years, and when medical spas began appearing, I often lectured on a variety of issues, from legal considerations to the scope of services and the level of care. And many practitioners at that time weren't really licensed. I mean, there weren't regulations that were set in place, and the medical spa environment was really not anticipated by the legal profession. So now we are looking at a relationship of a medical director and their kind of scope of services over a spa or a medical spa. Can you speak to that a bit? What are you seeing in these? What red flags are you seeing in these professional arrangements?
Sure. Well, unlicensed practice of medicine is a big concern, and that's really where I started looking into these things. As you'd mentioned, I was a lawyer on Wall Street. I was also studying healing, and I was doing yoga, and I was trying to figure out how all of this fits together. And one of the big concerns is that non-doctors could be either practicing medicine or intruding into the practice of medicine. So one of the blog posts that I wrote on my website is called, "If Someone Asks You to Be Medical Director, Run." And the whole idea is that a lot of people miss on yeah, it was basically based on this old, you know, Buddhist idea that if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. But, of course, it's really referring more to like a spiritual death. We, you know, we advocate nonviolence since we're yogis, of course. But the idea is that a lot of people misunderstand this idea of medical director. So a medical director is somebody who is supposed to direct medicine, a medical operation. In other words, other doctors as well as nurses, PAs, and they might even have MAs under them. But not the business side. They're not supposed to be running a general corporation or an LLC for the medical part of the practice. And one of the ways that the rules, again, prohibition against unlicensed practice of medicine translates is into a prohibition against corporate practice of medicine, or CPM is the acronym, corporate practice of medicine. The idea that a corporation is not supposed to be overly involved in clinical decision-making. So what I found in my experience, although I work a lot on the preventative side, I found also on the enforcement side, that the term medical director is often a trigger for enforcement, because you've got somebody who's medical director within a general business entity, and that puts them, it sort of mixes and matches the wrong things together, and perception a lot of times is reality. So if it's okay with you, I could maybe go into this just a little bit more to the structure.
Sure, yes. Okay. Yeah, because as I was saying, medical director, as you're saying, once was just a physician signing off on a number of facilities and maybe not even being within those structures, and that kind of, you know, threw everything up for grabs. So please do, go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I recently interviewed a potential client, and basically it was the nurse and the business person, the business mastermind on the phone. And after listening to them describe their highly successful practice, I said to them, where's the doctor? And the nurse said, well, he's playing golf. And then I said, well, I rest my case, which was kind of a way of saying, you guys really need a total compliance overhaul. If the doctor is never there in a name only, it's definitely a problem. And in fact, in California, yeah, where I reside, there's a good document called The Business of Medical Spas, The Bottom Line. And the board really warns against the doctor being there in name only. And that's one of the problems, which is picking somebody and just giving them a title. But the reality is that the patients belong to the physician. And especially if there's a problem, people will say, well, who's the physician? And if the patients that are going through the facility never, ever see a doctor and they feel like they're getting upsold procedures by various people from the front counter all along the line, they're going to complain. And that's going to lead to problems for all of the entities involved, as well as the clinicians and the business people.
Mm-hmm. So, early on, there was a lot of discussion about fee splitting, which is sort of what you're describing. Could you go into that topic a bit more?
Absolutely. So fee splitting simply means splitting the fee. The patient is paying a fee, which is supposed to go to the doctor. And the idea is that the doctor is supposed to be pure. So the doctor just focuses on the patient's health and ideally doesn't have conflict of interest, doesn't get into money-making where a business takes them from good medicine. And again, this is all theory and very idealistic. You know, in practice, we have insurance, we have all sorts of things that can intrude, but the idea of the purity is that the doctor is supposed to just completely focus on the patient and that whatever the patient pays the doctors, the check is basically not supposed to be split. Just to give you an example, you know, suppose that John is a doctor and he says, for every patient that I get, I charge $100, but I'll give you $50 for referring that patient. So that's a kickback, and also that's fee splitting. They're just taking $100 and they're splitting it between the two.
So I know that you're in California, but in the United States, what legislative and regulatory bodies enforce or define fee splitting practices and how this applies to medical spas?
Sure. First of all, the basic prohibition is often contained in a state statute that prohibit a physician or potentially any licensed healthcare provider from fee splitting. It'll either use that word or it might use the word kickback, which is conceptually very similar, or it might just use the definition, which is paying or receiving something of value in exchange for the referral of patients. So if you take the example I just gave you where a doctor says, hey, you send me a patient, I'll make X, I'll pay you Y, they're splitting that payment between themselves and the person that made the referral, and they're giving a kickback, they're giving the money, it's as an incentive for the referral. The idea is referrals should be made because you have a good doctor, not because you're getting money for the referral. So in that situation, the prohibition is going to be in the statute. And then for the person who violates that statute, if they're a licensee, they could be penalized. They could be perhaps fined. There might be even stiffer criminal penalties. And they could also be disciplined by the state board for professional misconduct. And that can be very serious.
Right. In the arrangement of relationships concerning medical spas, how does malpractice actually occur, and what are the consequences for that? I mean, you're referring to going back on the doctor's license and probably his or her insurance, but how does that actually lay out?
Well, malpractice means negligence, and so malpractice is a little different than fee splitting, but they're related in that anything that the practitioner does that's awry from a compliance standpoint, it can be typically considered professional misconduct. So they could get in trouble with the board and be subject to discipline, and ultimately that could even involve perhaps loss of licensure. But they can also get in trouble with a patient. The patient can sue on a variety of grounds. Malpractice would be one of them. Malpractice itself focuses on negligent behavior. And so when you look at the definition of negligence in professional healthcare services, it's comprised of two elements, two things. Number one is practicing below the standard of care. And number two, the patient gets injured because of that. So, I mean, just to give a really extreme, obvious example, you know, you're a surgeon and you're supposed to amputate and you, God forbid, you amputate the wrong leg. I mean, clearly, you know, that's not standard of care and the patient got injured. And so, yeah, you then there'd be a lawsuit for, you know, mega damages for the malpractice. But it can get really complicated. Yeah.
Well, let's say that I'm the medical director, God forbid, and I've got others working under me of various responsibilities. If they don't do something that's up to the standard of care for the facility, does everything come back on my license and my insurance?
Well, yeah, that's the next level up. So if to just think about it conceptually, there's two types of malpractice. Two types of negligence. One is a person can be directly negligent. So that's if you do something yourself, like sawing off the wrong leg, you pick up the saw, you are directly negligent. You can also be vicariously liable, vicariously negligent for the negligence of other people. So if you've hired a nurse and the nurse, let's say, is negligent, you could be vicariously liable because you were negligent in hiring. You didn't vet the person, or you were negligent in supervising. You didn't look at that person. Right. And figure out exactly what they were doing, you just weren't there, or you didn't have the right procedures in place. Any of those could be grounds for liability for that person's negligence.
So that kind of leads into the next nightmare, which is what is more advisable, because I've seen all of it over the years, having the physician perform all of the medical spa procedures, including injectables, for instance, or having a trained licensed esthetician who's trained maybe 3 months worth of aesthetics training, having them perform the medical spa procedures that they can within their state, or having a nurse practitioner perform most of the medical spa services and report back to the doctor.
Well, that's a really good question. You know, that really is the type of business question that can be informed by legal advice, because I would just say this from the 50,000 foot view. In a medical spa or a day spa or any of the healthcare ventures that you mentioned, as in many others, there's usually a conflict. What I see when people come to me is that they want to do whatever makes the most business sense. But whatever makes the most business sense is going to make the most money. Like, for example, just having a nurse in there doing everything, and the physician is the nurse's cousin who lives in a nearby state and maybe comes in once in a while and plays golf, and then they have a drink together and everything is good, and then the doc goes, you know, back home. You know, that might be make a lot of economic sense, but it doesn't make a lot of compliance sense, you know.
Right.
On the other hand, if you're absolutely paranoid and you try to be 1,000,000% compliant and you just ratchet everything up to the nth degree, then you're probably not going to make money, you know, because I'm all for compliance, and that's where I advise people. And at the same time, you know, there are just so many rules, and you want to think about them in a holistic way. And sometimes if you tighten one, you know, then you have to be a little bit more relaxed on the other. So you have to really understand where it is that you're going to invest your compliance efforts. So what I would say is that the best thing to do, you know, number one, as we said, don't have the physician abdicate responsibility. Understand that these are the doctor's patients, and the doctor ultimately is responsible and liable for what happens, clinically as well as legally. They're responsible. If you're going to have, when you do have these dependent providers, if providers are dependent on physician supervision or some kind of sign-off, have the legal documents in place that you need. to make sure that that can run smoothly. So, for example, with the nurses, you'll have your standardized procedures. With your PAs, you'll have your delegation of services. And you're going to make sure that everybody is operating within their own scope of practice, within what they're allowed to do. Mm-hmm. You're going to limit them contractually so they don't go outside that bubble. And that way, and then the third thing that I would say is the medical part. If you have a medical spa where you've got an aesthetic component, you've got estheticians working on, let's say, massage and facials, the medical part of the operation is going to be, in a way, almost like a business within a business. It's going to be a medical space. It's going to be separately delineated within the overall enterprise, so that everyone's clear that there's a physician in charge. And, you know, by paying attention to some of the basic ABCs, you're not only enhancing your safety profile, I think you're reducing legal risk, and you're giving an overall better impression, because one of the risks is that the next patient who comes in could be an undercover investigator.
Sure.
And if they come in and then, yeah, and, you know, the nurse is doing everything, and then they say, well, hey, where's the doctor? Oh, he's only here one Wednesday a month or something like that. You know, it's just going to look fishy whether or not all these things are in place. So I think, again, appearances are an important part of compliance, and making sure that the – I don't think the doc should do everything. On the other hand, obviously, I don't think that the nurses should be – are meant to be, especially RNs, fully autonomous. So maybe I sound like, you know, one of these Greek philosophers, everything in moderation, but I think it's about titrating the economics
right.
against the compliance and being sensible.
Okay, so what I've been seeing a lot of, and what kind of has taken hold since about 2005, is multi-locations with one physician as a part owner or owner, as well as a franchise, so multi-locations, different owners, and then one doctor overseeing all those facilities.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
Well,
I mean, that just sounds like a mess.
Yeah. Well, when you say overseeing, the supervision has to be real. And so that's very clear. And as I say, if the physician is, you know, is more than a name only, then, you know, if they have PAs, they're signing off on a prescribed number of charts. The charts is prescribed by regulation. If they're overseeing the nurses, then they are having standardized protocols and complying with the supervision requirements of the particular state. Now, it is possible to have the management services organization, I just call it MSO, or it's the management
mm-hmm.
company, you can have an MSO that provides all of the management and marketing functions for the MediSpa or the other venture. And so when I was talking about saying that I would get into structure before, that's really the way to do it. You've got the clinical practice on one side, and then you've got the MSO on the other. Sometimes...
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, and what I've seen is that MSO is driven by the non-physicians. But every once in a while, it can be ignited by a nurse or a physician who wants to wear two hats. They want to have a business hat besides the clinical hat. Or there might be a business person who wants to incentivize the clinician by giving them share ownership. It's not, let's just say it's not impossible, it's doable, and sometimes it can work, but there are, you know, some pitfalls to think about. One is that the minute that you do that, obviously your clinician has an immediate conflict of interest. And
right.
So some regulators might get up in arms about that, is one possible reality. Another one is if you have a good, strong management agreement and you've got a good, I'll call it separation of powers between these two entities,
mm-hmm.
then it's, you know, it's possible that you can work it out so that if anyone comes in and looks at it, they say, okay, this is the business side, this is the clinical side. It's very clear that the business side is providing services X, Y, and Z. They're at fair market value. This is not a fee splitting or kickback situation, and nor is it a corporate practice of medicine situation. Rather, we've got two entities, each in their own house, and one is serving the other. And in that model, you know, ideally, the patient is paying the docs or the doctor's professional medical corporation, and the professional medical corporation is paying the MSO for its services. And there's a perfect triangle there where the relationship is pure between the patient and the doc and between the doc and the service provider. That's in the best of all possible worlds.
Okay. Well, let's go to another topic that's really common in the spa and beauty industries, which is the FDA and where we're at with really claims, beauty claims, say I'm reducing cellulite, those kinds of claims, product claims that like visibly reduces fine lines and wrinkles. You've heard that before. Where are we really standing with the FDA on those kinds of promises or claims about products and services?
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that. Claims are a huge area of concern, and it's a big part of my practice. And what's so great is that I get to deal with the product side as well as the services sides. You know, claims are always dangerous because anytime you say that you can do something, someone can always find a reason that you didn't or why it's not true. And so claims are very I just wouldn't say dangerous, but I would say you have to pay attention to claims. Now, on the product side, claims are regulated by FDA, as you said, and by FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. Two rules to be aware of. On the FDA side, if you have a drug, you know, then drugs make drug claims, which is a claim to cure or treat that disease. So you can say, for example, this drug will remove cellulite, or, you know, just to take it out of the beauty context, this is a drug that cures cancer, for example, or diabetes. But the minute that you've got a dietary supplement or a cosmetic, you cannot make drug claims. You cannot make claims that a product will diagnose, cure, or treat disease. And that's often a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I recently represented a cosmetics company, and they received a warning letter where FDA took five of the claims on their website. Someone inside the organization just went in, probably did a search for, you know, some typical promises that you would see, like to give you an example, antiseptic, antibacterial. These are drug claims.
Mm-hmm.
Helping to treat eczema, psoriasis. These are drug claims. And so they went on the company's website. They picked a handful of these. And then when I went in and I looked, I found over 150 claims on the company's website that were potential disease. So, you know, they needed advice, and they needed it ASAP, and they needed to rewrite and rebrand and remarket all of the content. I mean, page after page after page. And what I was able to do to help focus their time and make it efficient was I was able to say, here are the guidelines, here are the main things that you're doing over and over. Go and clean these up internally, you know, and get it done as fast as you can, because if they come back or they see that you haven't done something, or they only identified five, but next time they catch another dozen, that
right,
could be the
right
death knell for the company. Yeah.
Right. So say I'm just a single physician. I want to enhance my practice by adding medical services. What am I really looking at in terms of making sure that legally I'm doing the right things?
Do you mean by adding products to your services?
Well, I mean by getting someone like yourself to help me make sure that I've got everything lined up, that, you know, my systems are correct, and I'm not breaking any laws. About how much time does that take? What sort of investment? Is it kind of a package deal, or how do you deal with that?
You say, so if you're a physician, you want to get into the medical spa business and you want to work with somebody, you want to make sure that you're compliant.
Yes.
You know, first of all, I would say it's good, you know, thank you for calling. That was a smart idea, because the worst mistake you can make is just to go in based on somebody's promises and just to believe that it's a very, very part-time activity. I think recognize again that as physician, you're responsible for those patients. So basically, in essence, you're setting up a medical practice within a business in another location. What does it take? You know, it can be done efficiently, but one has to be aware of the different areas that come up. If you're going to have an MSO arrangement and you're contracting with the MSO, we want to have a management agreement in place. That agreement, like any legal contract that you might sign, you know, gets reviewed by lawyers on both sides, and it can be drafted in favor of the spa, or it can be drafted in favor of the physician. So whichever side you're on, you know, I could represent either side, and there are certain things that we want to have, you know, in favor of one or the other. And just to give you an example, termination. Who can end the arrangement? You know, is it in your interest to get out quickly if you find out that there's a problem? Or is it the kind of thing where you'd like to lock somebody in for as long as possible? There might be different views on that. Who has to purchase the insurance? Who provides the equipment and the supplies? How do the expenses get divvied up? These are all things that need to be thought about carefully. So there's some work involved in terms of figuring the management piece out, the management MSO arrangements, and there's some work involved in terms of figuring out internally how to deploy the different dependent practitioners so that there is real physician supervision, and to try to minimize vicarious liability, the kinds of risks that you as a consultant in the industry are, you know, aware of that you suggested on this call. It's a matter of going in, rolling up your sleeves. And what lawyers do is, what yogic lawyers do is we project beautiful, positive things, and we're also trained to look at what could happen if things go wrong. And
exactly.
That's a great skill. Yeah, and to try to build in protection so when things happen, in the best of relationships, inevitably things happen. You know, the relationships change, they're falling out. Falling out can occur, people can argue over money. And the best thing that's going to protect you in that situation is language. The words that you have in your agreements and your documents, they could be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars down the line. And,
right.
You know, better to have it.
Time. Right. Well, yeah. Michael Cohen, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Can you offer your website to our listeners if they'd like to contact you?
Absolutely. So my website is michaelhcohen.com. It's michaelhcohen.com. And if you go on the website, you'll find also, just might mention, I have a blog. I have a ton of articles on medical spa, fitness industry, holistic health, integrative medicine, functional medicine, anti-aging medicine, legal issues, anything you could think of.
You've got it covered.
A lot of things you could think of. Yes.
Well, again, thank you so much, Michael. And until next time, this is Melinda Minton with Spa Living with the Spa Association.